Welcome back to the show. There's no telling where we'll go. So come and share a laugh on the Imp and Skiz podcast.
Swagger. Talking about swagger and strutting, and it's a form of confidence. This is actually something I've been wanting to talk about for a while for a couple different reasons, because I have some context here in regards to, you know, what it is and what it means and why I think it's good. I do. And a lot of people associate swagger with arrogance.
Arrogance. Yeah, yes. That's the word I was going to say.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily agree.
I think there's a line.
Of course. When it crosses into arrogance. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just not swagger. That's just not. I see swagger as a very healthy thing when done properly. And when it's arrogance, I don't think it's healthy anymore. I could be wrong here, but this is just my thoughts, right? And that's sort of that's the pitfall of it, right? Let's talk about the promising energy of what it is to have to strut, mm-hmm. To have that confidence. And let's talk about the pitfalls of it when it turns in arrogance, because let's talk about what this is. There are people who are good at something and they don't have swagger and they don't have that strut. And I think they end up getting held back. I do, in regards to their own capacity. There are people who are good at things and they have so much swagger, it turns into arrogance. And I think it now they're being held back because I think that their ability to positively affect others has been dampened. I believe mm-hmm. that. And then there are people that, have really nothing really good going on, but somehow they have swagger. it makes them look like idiots. So what does it mean to you? Let me hear your take on what it is to strut, what it is to have swagger.
I think it's just exuding confidence, right? Like when you get to the point to where you are confident in your ability to do something or some kind of skill set that you have, and, you're able to kind of let people know that you do have that confidence. You do have, you know, faith in yourself that you're not going to mess it up or lead them astray in what you're telling them about the thing you're confident in. And it comes off as swagger. Like, I don't know. You tell me. Swagger and confidence to me is one and the same.
Okay.
Do you feel that there's any difference in the two words?
I do. But I think it's subtle. I think the differences are subtle. I think
swagger being a display of confidence.
Yes. Maybe. That's a good way to put it, man. That's a really good way to put it.
So yeah, I mean, you can be quietly confident, right? Like my wife is good at that. She's very quietly confident at everything she does. She doesn't go around bragging about how amazing she is at interior design. Mm-hmm. She just does it and let the results show.
Yeah,
you know, as opposed to kind of like going around and you think of like people puffing out their chests and being like, you know, look at what I did, I'm awesome, right? You kind of like have this confidence that you're exuding, you're showing off, you know, you're letting people know that you feel that way about what it is you're confident about. And so that's when you start to show swagger. I also think that in general, humans find confidence and swagger sexy.
I think so too.
I think for the most part, most people are kind of turned on by somebody that has confidence and has a little bit of swagger to them.
Yes, but to me, that last part that you explained, puffing your chest out, and that to me, that is actually when it's dipped over into arrogance. And I think that the ability to strut and the ability to have swagger, I think that there is such a thing as a quiet confidence. And I think that that you're right. Swagger is a display of confidence, but not an over display of confidence. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is swagger is very, very appropriate in competitive environments because it plays a different edge, right? There's a clip out there, and I don't even know if I would call this boxer as somebody with swagger, but... And he was bigger than his opponent, right? There's this clip out there where they went and touched gloves, and the guy he was about to compete with, they touched gloves, and the other guy turned around and left the ring. Now, there's maybe a backstory there I don't know about or whatever, but this is very, like, he was so, like, we haven't swung at all, and I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, he just knew he was done. They hadn't done anything yet. Mike Tyson's another one. If you ever watch this, dude, and I'll see if I can find a clip of this. He has used to do this thing. I mean, he's... got to be the greatest boxer that's ever lived, right? That's you, buddy. Yeah, that's you. Phone's buzzing over there.
Must be super important, actually. Yeah, here we go. We'll break the podcast for a second. Everybody want to know the text message I got?
Yeah.
Random number?
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, dude, answer that.
Do you get these?
Answer it. That's important.
Hey. Yes.
all the time.
Report junk.
They're phishing texts.
Delete and report junk. It happens to me on the daily.
I get it all the time.
Anyway, there's
too.
A reason why I kept my phone next to me, I'm sure. Not
so
really.
Annoying. Yeah, I get it all the time. So Mike Tyson, I'll see if I can find the clip and I'll throw it up on the wall here if I can find it. But he would do this thing to where before the fight, he would stand there and the referee is explaining their things. And he not only had this confidence in this, he could show swagger with nothing. He could show swagger with no movement and he would stare right in his opponent's eyes and they would sway back and forth. And his eyes, like he was watching a tennis match, would just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he never changed what he was doing. And as he was doing it the whole time, he was just looking for that moment of weakness, just that one. And when he would see them look away for a second, he knew he won the fight. Like, it's crazy, right? He just knew like that. He was just like that good. And the reason that this particular topic is so dear to me is because I want to actually bring my daughter into the conversation here. Not her personally, but this is a situation to where I didn't even ask her permission on this. So I hope she's cool with it. Sorry, sweetie. She is, most people know that she's a D1 athlete and she's a softball player and she's been a softball player for a very long time. And one of the things that made her stand out when she was younger was her batting, right? When you're very young, starting very, very young. And when you're a good batter and like naturally, then you want to squeeze on that. That's very, very big, right? So in baseball, if you can play your position, they're going to teach you how to bat. In softball, if you can hit, they're going to find a position for you. That's the way it works, right? There's difference. That's a big difference between the two. And she was just like whatever team she was on. She was always just like one of the best batters, if not the best batter, just hitting bombs. It's a big deal. So we let's get her like even more training and this and that. And she just got to a point to where she was average. I did the math and she was on this one team where she was averaging like 1.2 or 1.3 home runs a tournament. Right. Like it was like, if there was a tournament, a day of two or three games, she's going to hit at least one tournament or one home run, maybe two. Okay, let's fast forward. She goes into college, and now as a catcher, she's very, very, very good. And something has happened with her batting. She'll figure it out, but something's happened with her batting. Now, could it be that she's also batting against some of the greatest pitchers there is? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah,
I'm not stupid.
You see it at every sport where you go up a level, high school, college, professional.
Yeah,
there's struggle. I mean, there's a reason why freshmen typically don't get to play on college teams and rookies don't get a lot of playing time in professional sports, like it takes time to adjust.
It does.
Right?
And here she is about to go into her junior year and she's had a couple, 2 years of where she had like these really good batting stints. And then it just took one or two strikeouts it gives me PTSD. Like if she strikes out, I'm like, okay, here's a slump. There's a slump coming. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because especially if she strikes out looking, like that's a very, very, very big deal in both sports, baseball and softball, going down looking, meaning you didn't swing at the ball. So now she finds herself in this relatively unfamiliar territory to where she is struggling at the plate, right? And you can see it. You can see it before the first pitch. You can see it as she approaches it. She looks scared. She looks timid. Mm-hmm. There's no swagger whatsoever. But when she's catching, all the swagger in the world. Not that she goes out there strutting, but she goes out there, she's loose, she's flowing, she's commanding the infield. She's just got it. They warm up. There's always three or four warm up pitches before the inning starts. And then they throw down to second. She throws from her knees and hits second. Like she's knocking the flies off a wing, knocking the wings off a fly. She's just got that aim. She's just so comfortable, dude. The amount of mistakes that she makes behind the plate is next to none. She's just, you know what I mean? Because the confidence is there. She just got it, you know? And you can see it. You know when she's going to have a good inning before the inning started because the swagger's there. You can just see it, you know? And you know what her bat is going to be like when she looks scared, like a deer caught in headlights. Like you just know what's coming. And there's something to be said for the power of that level of confidence, of just knowing who you are, owning what you're, like when you're good at something, I'm talking to you, I'm talking to everybody here. When you're good at something, don't be afraid to show it. Don't go blast it from the mountaintops. That's not what that is. But understand, recognize when you're good at something and strut a little bit. There's health in that.
Yeah, yeah. Feel free to have that confidence and let it show just a little bit. Like you said, I mean, and I can see what you're saying. Like how many times has your confidence be shook in something and then it becomes that kind of like rabbit hole that you go down, where it's like, because you've dropped your confidence a little bit, you come up, you're timid to do something you once were confident in. And then because of that, you've gotten worse and worse. Yeah. And then it gets in your head. And then you just like, you immediately think I'm not going to do a good job. I'm going to suck at something I was once good at.
Yeah.
And it takes, I mean, there's sports, a huge thing about sports psychology, right? To help, you know, you go to a sports psychologist and they try to help you figure out how to rethink, you know, so you're not going out there with a negative mindset. I mean, turn it around to just anything in life, really. Like it's a mindset, right? Like your confidence being shook is a mindset. You're going out there with doubt versus with that confidence that you're going to pull off something great. And immediately you're it's like your brain makes it happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whatever you feel is going to happen, your brain's going to make it happen. You go out there thinking, I'm going to hit a home run every single pitch. You might not, but you're going to probably do better than I'm going to strike out.
Yes.
Again. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
If that's what's in your head as you walk to the plate, I'm going to strike out again because I'm in a slump and this is what's been happening. Guess what's going to happen?
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen again.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's a big sports psychology behind it and beyond sports. I mean, I think it relates to a lot of things in life, you know, like one talk Minecraft, you know, MCC. I had an MCC that I didn't train for. And when I went into it, I said, I'm going to suck because I didn't train enough this week. What do you think happened?
You won. I'm kidding, obviously.
49th or 39th place out of 40 players. You know what I mean? Like that's because I felt it going in. And so it's like I made it happen. I was in doubt the entire time, you know? So yeah, you can put yourself in a space to where you're making it happen because you're in that poorly thinking space,
yes,
you know?
And that's what I mean. That's why I talk about the promise of it, of knowing what you're good. Be honest with yourself and what you're good at. Don't tell yourself you're good at something that you're not. That's not good. But when if you play baseball, you play softball and you're in the dugout and somebody's up to bat and you're looking at the batting lineup. Okay. And you're like, okay, 1, 2, 3, I'm up in 4 or whatever. And you start going through scenarios in regards to if he strikes out and then he gets thrown out, I don't have to bat. Take yourself out of the lineup. You don't belong there. Right. Mm-hmm. What you should be doing is saying, okay, please get on base. Please get on base.
Because I want to drive it home.
I want to drive
grand
it home.
Slam.
And, yes. Yeah. That's the scenario you need to be fabricating in your mind because you need to be that confident that you got it. And then when it's your time and the game's on the line or whatever, go out there, puff the chest out, not overly so, just go out there. Like this is what I do. Here's an example. That's actually, in fact, when my daughter and her friends, I know a lot of her teammates, and I know what they're capable of, right? And everybody is just, when I know what they're capable of, I'm not going to lie to them. And for the record, I don't think they hear me anyways through the fence, but a lot of people are going to say things like, you know, stay hot or you got this, a lot of positive things, mm-hmm. right? And my go-to, and I have to know what they're capable of. My go-to is I yell their name and I say, do what you do. You know what I mean? As in this, don't worry about that. Just you do what you do. Or my second one is do your thing. As in your mm-hmm. thing. This is what you do. Yeah. This is why you're here. And it's amazing. You can see the difference in a lot of these girls that step up to the plate and some of them got that swagger, man. And when you walk up there with that level of confidence, the pitcher's already worried. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what you want. That's what you want.
Imagine, you know, I don't know how many people are actually like baseball or softball fans, but imagine on your way to the plate, staring down the pitcher and like basically telling them with your eyes alone, I'm going to hit a home run off you and you're going to be embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you could send that message to the pitcher as you're walking out, chances are, guess what? Now the pitcher's going to be timid.
That's right.
And throw something a little weaker or throw a pitch that they didn't intend to throw.
Yeah.
And boom. You know what I mean?
Yep. My daughter has had coaches in the past where it felt like they were instructing every player on the team to always take the first pitch. Always take the first pitch. And for whatever, get the cadence down, do whatever. I can't even begin to explain to you how against that I am. It is the dumbest thing on the planet because so many things happen. First of all, you take that first pitch, it's probably going to end up being a strike, and now you're behind in the count, and the pitcher's winning, okay? Second thing that's going to happen is the pitcher is going to catch on to the fact that they're all taking that first pitch, and they're just going to pitch it right down the center. Mm-hmm. You're going to start every single one by just being down. You're just down. You're down.
Yeah.
You're just down right away. And it's like, you can't do that. This thing is a battle. And it starts now. It starts with what you just talked about, looking them in the eyes and doing that thing. And that's what that Mike Tyson clip is all about. The fight hasn't started. There's been no ding ding and he's already won. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so let me tell you where you have swagger, and it's the greatest, and you don't even know you do it because you're probably thinking I would never do that because you associate swagger with arrogance. And textbook, that might be more of the proper, but to me it's not. It's just not. Swagger is very healthy. We used to play basketball a lot, and we would go on the court where we worked, and it would be a bunch of us or whatever. And there were some pretty good players, but you were the best player every time, every single time. Didn't matter if we got new people. You were always the best player. Even when we'd have a little pickup with somebody else or whatever, you had the best ball handling skills. You had the best understanding of the game. I would argue my deep shot was a little bit better than yours, but that's because I suck everywhere else. So I worked on that a lot. But your inside game was sick. Your defense was sick. Like your passing, everything. You were always the best one. And you knew it. You knew it. And you didn't flaunt it. But you knew it. You would walk out onto that court. And when you would enter the court, you walked out there like, this is my court. You're all just visiting. You know what I mean? And it was so much fun to watch. But it was one of those things where I was like, dude, like, this is what, right there, man. Like whoever's on your team, that team's going to win. You know, this is good. That's what you want to do.
Oh, man. Thank you. I played a lot of basketball growing up. And I never would have been, even if I'd put everything into it, I never would have been able to, like, get into college and play on a college team. And I knew that. Like, I knew my limitations, and it wasn't just physical. I just know how I am personally, like, I'm a 90% person, and it takes that extra 10% to get to those kind of levels, as your daughter has probably found out, or maybe even, you know, 110%, which is a cliche, but anyway, I knew I was never going to put that much into it. And also I'm short, and short people don't make it to the NBA unless you're Spud Webb or Muggsy Bogues. It's very far and few in between.
Yeah.
So, I did enjoy it. I really enjoyed it from a very young age. I was in like YMCA leagues. I was on my high school basketball team. And I remember, I got to tell this story because it's like one of the greatest moments of my life.
I love it.
So I had gotten a new wristband. You know, I liked wearing wristbands because, like, you could wipe your sweat in the game. And I didn't like when my sweat got in my eyes and stuff. So I'd get a wristband, and I'd use the wristband to, like, wipe my sweat off my forehead and stuff during the game. And I'd gotten a brand new wristband. It was a Nike wristband. I was super proud of it.
Makes you faster.
Yeah. So
the swoosh.
And so all at the time, you know, and still to this day, Michael Jordan, favorite player ever. And he wore number 23 on his jersey. And so I asked my mom, I was like, can you get me some red thread? You know, because I wanted to stitch the number 23 into my wristband. And so she did. She got me red because he was on the Chicago Bulls, and their color was red. And so I spent hours, and I didn't even really know how to stitch.
I was just gonna say,
I was just kind of like figuring it out. I might ask my mom a few questions, but so I spent hours stitching carefully the number 23 into the wristband. And the very next day, I had a basketball game. Guess how many points I scored?
Did you score 23?
I scored 23 points. And I swear, I don't know what it was, but during the game, and this was like a famous Michael Jordan quote too, it felt like I was throwing the ball into an ocean. Like the rim felt bigger than normal. Like I had a mini ball and the rim was huge. And I couldn't miss. Like, literally every shot I threw up.
That's so awesome.
I couldn't miss. But I went into that game with being proud that I had this wristband, and it gave me this, like, extra little confidence for some reason and some swagger on the court. And, like, every time I touched the ball during that game, I knew it was going in. And if I showed you the highlight reel that I made of that game in particular, you would be like, what? Because some of the shots I was doing were like the most crazy, like running to the corner, fading away from the rim as I'm like fading out of bounds, throwing the ball up, banking it somehow, and it going in. It was like the craziest stuff was happening. But I knew every time I touched the ball, I was going to shoot it and it was going to go in the hoop. It was crazy.
I think I've seen this. Is it like a really crappy old VHS quality? Is it like it looks like it's skipping and like popping around?
Well, because, you know, I had to take like the original camcorder tape. And I was trying to do like, this is before like video editing software and digitization of video was a thing. And I'd have to like splice it into a VCR and record it into clips. So like the original footage wasn't that bad. But like as I made my own little highlight tape that I don't know what for. But yeah, I was like slowing down footage and it was like getting the tracking and stuff in it. You've probably seen that bit. Yeah.
So it is or it isn't digitized.
It is now. Yeah. I at some point found the tape and it's digitized.
All right.
I can show you.
Well, here's the deal. So If it exists, then it just played while you were telling that story right here on the wall.
Okay.
If it didn't, then I'll put up like a cartoon basketball. I don't know. I don't know what to do. But like, I have no idea if this is something we can pull off.
I can get you the footage.
Okay. If you can get it, throw it on the NAS.
I
have the
footage. I get it.
Oh, I'd love to get that and put that on the video.
Yeah. You can show some of it. I mean, it was insane.
And maybe we can look up the amazing video of when we played on the Suns court.
Let's not do that.
No, we're not doing
Let's not do that. That was story, the worst. That's a story that our wives will not let us forget.
No, and they shouldn't. Yeah. We should be humbled.
There's a little 3-on-3 tournament at our work, you know, and we worked at a place that we felt like wouldn't have a whole lot of athletes. So we thought we would do pretty well in the tournament. And then we show up and it was actually at the Phoenix Suns as the NBA basketball team.
Yeah.
It was at their court, like they're in their arena, and we got to step foot on their floor, which was a like just amazing experience to begin with. But we had kind of like told our wives that we were like good at basketball.
Why are we telling this story? I hate it so much.
Yeah, it's good to be humbled too as well.
It is.
That's the opposite side of the coin here. But yeah. we had kind of like day after day, we'd played a lot of basketball during our breaks at work and stuff. And like you said, like on the court, we were getting it together, you know, like I was feeling like I was in, you know, high school again, and with ball handling and the passing and the shooting and stuff, and you were draining threes and stuff, and we felt like we were just going to be a force to be reckoned with. And you go home every day and you brag about all this stuff to your significant other, and then they show up to a tournament where like there's much better teams, and for whatever reason, we were just overwhelmed with the whole experience or something.
Well, they were so,
because all of us were worse than we've ever been.
It
was like triple embarrassing. You know what it I mean? Really like was. Like we're here to compete and like put on a good showing and hopefully, you know, maybe win. And instead we're just like completely swept off the court like we were complete jokes in front of our family who felt like they were gonna come watch semi-professional basketball players the way we built ourselves up, and instead it was just like
the worst ever.
Who do the Globetrotters play every game? That they just crush the the Generals or something, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, we were just a joke.
Well, we were playing against three other teams of three. Well, first of all, we had our team was five or six people,
but there's only, have subs.
Yeah, we only had three on at the time, right? And just for the record, you and I were the only ones who drained anything. Like none. I love you guys. I love you. Nobody else could hit a single shot. Not one, dude. You and I are the only ones putting points on the board.
McBean's gonna be like, I remember that differently.
Yeah, McBean, we love you, dude. Okay, you sucked that day, and it happens to the best of us.
He's
pretty good. He actually is pretty good.
Yeah.
Neither was I was worse. You were worse. We were all worse. And just whatever. It was awful. Okay. I don't know why we're talking about this. But here's the deal though. We walked in with a little bit of swagger. Now it wasn't completely unfounded. We had a ton of experience of playing a lot of different people where we worked or playing each other as well, where we just were the better ones. We went to a place that only attracted like established 3-on-3 crews and they were better.
Yeah.
That's it. And so you're 100% correct. It is good to be humbled. It really, really is. I didn't need the constant years of mocking from my wife about it. Yes. She loves, it's one of her favorite stories. You guys tell these stories like it's behind the back. And we show up and me and Impulse's wife are like, what is this?
I know.
Does he tell you these stories like this?
It was bad because I knew it at the time that this was going to be the last time my dad has ever seen me play basketball. Like a competitive environment, because I hadn't played competitive basketball in like two decades at this point, you know, or a decade at least. And so this was one more chance for my dad to see me play. Cause he used to love going to my games. He was like my biggest cheerleader, you know, always there with the video camera rolling. That's how I got the highlight clips. And I was so ready to just show him that I still had it. And it was obvious I didn't. Yeah. And it was just super embarrassing. I just like,
it's a different gig. You have to keep in mind something that like, and I'm not making excuses for us and we got to get back to swagger, but you got to keep in mind that the whole look and feel was different. You'd go to take a shot and it wasn't just the rim and the backboard. It was incredible, incredible amount of real estate and hundreds of seats behind it. That was just the whole ambiance was so different. And I remember thinking it was like super cool. You know what I mean? But I just remember being like, dude, this is like the worst we've ever played by a long shot. But we walked in with swagger. We felt, I mean, that's the very first NBA level 3-point I ever took. I drained because I was confident. I was good. I felt good.
It was in practice. I airballed my first attempt at an NBA.
Did you airball it?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Boy, that was probably that may have derailed you right from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. See how like one little thing could just set you in a spiral, right? Like I might have walked in with swagger and I not only missed my first like NBA three on the Phoenix Suns basketball court, but I airballed it and immediately felt embarrassed. And it was like, uh-oh, going to be one of those days. You know what I mean? Like something simple like that. You're going to be like, oh, going to be one of those days. And guess what? Yeah. It was one of those days. Weird. I made it happen. You know? Yeah. But yeah,
it happens, dude, but you got to get over it. But okay. So let me tell you about my first time I ever realized that I'm awesome. I was 2 years old. I'm just kidding. My whole life, I'll tell you, I can confidently tell you that I'd never experienced any sort of form of swagger or strut until my first year in high school. And the story goes like this. This was on the drum line, and you remember this drum. We've talked about this drum line a million times. Mm-hmm. And this was legitimately, like we've talked about this, it was the greatest high school drum line in the state by a large margin. And it was arguably one of the best in the nation. It just was. Like I said, Texas is going to always crush us, but it was one of the best in the nation. It just was. And we had the good grace of being taught by one of the greatest drumming teachers of all time. Yeah, right?
Who just got recognized in a drum magazine like a couple weeks ago, by the way. I don't know.
Again?
You saw that.
That's more than once. Then I did not know that. Yeah. Oh, God, should we say his name?
Probably not.
Wait, hold on. I'm trying to think what's wrong with doing that. I don't think we should. Let's not do it. We can't say the name.
But yeah, I saw it come across Facebook because I don't know why I've logged into Facebook more than once in the past week. But anyway, I saw it on Facebook that he was recognized in a magazine. It was kind of like, if you were a former student, make sure you share this, you know? And I realized, he's had a lot of former students. Holy cow. Yeah. Like he's taught so many people.
So many people. Yeah. And all right. So we go to this competition and obviously we live in Arizona, but the competition is in New Mexico. And I'm on the drum line and I'm a snare player on the drum line, which is an elite position that you don't back with a drum line that is that accomplished. You're not going to see a freshman on the snare line. So we could do another whole podcast about how miserable that year was, but I don't regret it. It was a good thing. I worked so hard. I was just so hard, dude. And we were so good. We were just so good. And it was, I didn't really know how good we were. I didn't know. I just thought this is what it was to be on a high school drum line. And I knew that we were a little bit better than everybody else, but I didn't know about what I'm about to tell you until it happened. So we're in New Mexico. We did our show and it's wrapping up. And so now it's awards time and they give out division awards and they give out like section awards. Right. And so obviously I would like the band to do well, right. It's a marching band thing. I would like the band to do well, but my whole focus is, did we win? I want drumline to win the caption,
meaning you're the best drumline.
Yeah. Which drumline are they going to pick out of all these drumlines that came in from many different states, at the highest level of competition from a high school standpoint, as the best drumline. And we were about me and the drummers, we weren't even like hanging out. We weren't even like on the field. We were like way far away to where we could hear the announcer and stuff, but we were nowhere near the band. We were nowhere near where you accept the award, nowhere near it. It was kind of in the distance, but we could still hear them. And I was kind of confused. Like, what are we doing over here? Well, we were going off to go do our own thing because we were just too cool to stick around. So we're walking and the commentator said, next up is going to be the drum caption. And I'm like, guys, like they're, you know, here I am, little freshman, and they're walking and talking. These are the juniors and seniors. And I said, guys, they're about to announce the drum caption. And they all stop and they looked like, bro, we got it. Like, it was like it was the coolest moment in the world. They're like, bro, we got it. And they turned back around. They just kept on walking. And I didn't go with them. My foot were just nailed to the ground and I just listened and they said us. They just said it and our band went nuts and we weren't even there. I mean, that to me, that's a little too arrogant.
Yeah,
but it wasn't, we weren't doing it for the sake of arrogance. This was swagger. This was strutting. This was just like, there was no prayer that none of these other drum lines were anywhere near us. Mm-hmm. And when they said, bro, we got it, they walked on, the announcer said it, band went nuts. And I sat there and I thought, I'm a badass. Like I, like in that moment, like that was the first time. And then I went and I followed my guys and I just, I felt like I was walking on clouds because of all the blood, the sweat, the tears, like the pain that I had gone through, like all of that, dude. And I was like, that I deserve this moment. I'm going to strut a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just felt so good. And what's funny is in that moment, as we were walking, somebody else, I think a drum major had to go get the award. It was this giant trophy. And that was the trophy that was in the cold opening. Yeah. If you're audio podcast only, you don't know what I'm talking about. In the beginning, we did a cold open where I was just kind of flaunting this trophy for fun. It was just a fun little thing. And that trophy was the one we got. So why do I have it? Would I steal it? You damn right I did. And here's why. Here's why. Because you fast forward the clock, okay? And that band, like, that was the highlight. Like, that was the peak of it. And then it just, like, went on this decline. And it went through, like, dude, I was at that high school for 4 years, and I had three different teachers. You must be joking. That's ridiculous. And yeah, it's something political happened. I don't care about it. But my senior year, I was, the new teacher had come in and just like, we're doing things our my way, which is fine. Do your thing. I went in the back and there was a big giant box of just what they deemed as garbage. And that trophy was in it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm taking this. Yeah. I was like,
you rescued it. You didn't steal it.
Yeah. Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it wasn't garbage. Like they're going to throw it away, but it was more like,
they were going to put it in a storage closet somewhere and forget about it until it was time to throw it away.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you're not putting it in a display case, then it's
right. Gone. It's like, I'm taking this.
So
yeah.
Man,
but I kept it not as a token of we won, but literally as a kind of a memento of the very first time I ever felt awesome. Mm-hmm. Like I'm awesome. Like it felt good. You know what I mean? And from that day forward, my confidence in drumming was very, very high. It really was. And it dipped later when things went differently, but it was very high. My ability to learn new things was quicker. My ability to teach was better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Everything, because I had that. I'm strutting, and that's the level of confidence. That's the health piece I'm talking about. Right. Yeah. But when you start to confuse the display of the confidence with the actual level of competence, that's when it turns into arrogance. That's when you're kind of losing your way.
It's interesting how your confidence levels can shift based on like where you are, like who you're around or what, because I went through this when I went to, I was on the same, you know, you were senior, I was a sophomore. And so I was on the same line that was, you know, this is starting the decline, but it was still really, really good.
Yeah.
One of the best in the state still. And so I got to experience that, and I got to be taught by this guy we're talking about, who was just one of the best instructors, percussion instructors on the planet, I believe. And so I learned a lot. I did private lessons with you. You saw I got to get skilled, pretty skilled at drumming. You know, never to your level, but I was getting close. And I graduated. I was also section leader my senior year. You were gone by then. You know, obviously 2 years ahead of me. But and so I was getting a lot of confidence in high school. And you know, we would do these drum circles, these drum offs when our football teams would play each other and another band would come and we would pull their drum line aside and we'd go out a ways from the football field and we'd all get in a circle and do a little beat and everybody would go in the middle and do a little solo.
So much fun, dude.
And show off their skills. And every time that happened, I knew I was going to drop jaws.
Yeah.
Like I knew I was going to step into the middle of that circle and everybody in the circle was going to be blown away by what I threw down on that snare drum.
Yeah.
You know, and I just knew it. I had that confidence. I took that confidence off to NAU. I went to college for a semester at NAU and was on the drum line there. And I came into that and it was kind of the same deal there where I went in and I had a high confidence and I tried out for the snare line and they were kind of like, nobody makes a snare line in freshman year and you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, watch me. You know what I mean? And I walked in for the audition and it was just me and like the head guy, you know, the instructor, the percussion instructor there. And I did my thing. And as I was doing my thing, I looked at the little window that was in the door that was closed to the little band room thing that I was in. And there was about four faces squished into the window. And it was people that had been on the drum line and were going to be on it again. And they were just like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so my swagger during that time was at an all-time high. Like I was just, I knew I was the best, if not, or one of the best, if not the best person on that drum line.
Yeah.
And I was challenging their instructor to make the music harder, but they knew they couldn't because there was other people that couldn't do it. So
plenty of other people that could. Yeah.
I was like, can we have some flams, please? Know, like, just give us some flams. Anyway, so fast forward.
Can we have some flams, please?
Seriously. So fast forward a little bit. And it comes time to, you know, that football season's over. And I'm kind of thinking I might not continue on at NAU. I was just kind of, it wasn't my scene. And the instructor that we've been talking about from high school called me up and was like, hey, I'm doing a drum corps. I'm instructing in this drum corps. You should come try out for it. We're going to have tryouts in November or whatever. And I was like, all right, I'll come try out. And so he's like, we're carpooling. Like all the students that I've invited to come try out, we're going to get in a van and we're going to drive up there and go to tryouts and we'll see what happens. And so we're in the van and we halfway to Anaheim from Glendale or whatever. And we pit stop to get gas and get whatever. And he's like, you know, so you excited for tryouts? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, you think I could have a chance at making the bass line? And so the bass drum players, you know? And he's like, bass line? He's like, dude, you need to be trying out for snare.
Yeah.
I was like to me, I was at this point, like I had all this extreme confidence from college and stuff, but I knew I was going into drum corps and I had seen what drum corps is.
Yes.
And I was like, different. I'd watched the Blue Devils and all these crazy drum corps. And I was like, you really think I'm there? Mm-hmm. And he's like, You'll make it, dude. You got this. And he had faith in me that I didn't have in myself. And so when we got
who are you talking about?
I'm talking about when I drummed for
the... No. Who are you talking to, I mean?
It was our instructor from
high school. Our instructor,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we chose not to say his name, so
yeah.
Now you made it hard.
No. Well, our instructor, that's... I got you.
Yeah. Okay. Same instructor from high school is who it was. And so anyway, we got there and I was like, okay, he told me I can do it. So now all of a sudden I got confidence again. Tried out for snare drum and I made it.
Yeah.
I actually made it and I couldn't believe it. Now I made it, but I was on the end of the line, the end of the snare line, the outer edge of the snare line. And then there was like seven of us, which meant I was the seventh best out of the seven that were there pretty much. You
That's
know what I mean?
Supposed to mean?
That's what it's supposed to mean. Right. So that started to play in my head. I'm glad that I made it, but that started to play in my head. Like there's six dudes that are better than me. And I, you know me, I don't like being the worst at anything. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put my all into this. And so I was putting my all into it and I was feeling really good. But every time we would be on the field or be in practice or whatever, there would be some dirt. And that's when not all all seven of us were hitting the drum at the exact same time, at the exact same dynamic and all that kind of stuff. Right. So we're just a little bit off. It's like when you, instead of it being a clean hit of all seven of us together, it wasn't, it was dirty. And so the dirt was coming from my side of the line. And for the longest time, I got blamed. Like for almost the entire season, I was the dirty one, the one that just couldn't get it together, the one that couldn't play cleanly with the rest of the group. And so my confidence started to get shattered once again. And I went to, I made really good friends with these two dudes. They're amazing people. We can say their names, I guess, Adam and Phil. Mm-hmm. And, we hung out a lot and I could tell they were good guys and I was being broken down, you know, like I'd lost my confidence and I was like, guys, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Like I'm trying everything. I'm working my tail off here to not be the tick, you know, the guy that's screwing things up.
Right.
And they're like, well, let's play together. Just the three of us. And so we got our drum pads out and we played through the entire show top to bottom. And the second we got done with the last note, they both looked at me and said, you're not the tick. You just played that absolutely perfectly clean. The entire show, note for note, every bit of it was perfect. It's not you. Come to find out, it was the guy to my right, the guy on the inside. Yeah. So what happens with sound is you have your section leader in the middle who's kind of like setting the tone and everybody's kind of just feeding off of that. And it kind of like travels outwards. Well, if you get one person... as you're listening, because you're listening in, you're always listening in to the center of the line, right? And so I was on the left side, so it was my right ear. The person to my right was screwing things up, and that's what I was listening to.
Yep.
And because of that, like we were both dirty, because that's who I was going off of for this is what should be played. And so then it came to find out that I wasn't the tech the entire time. It wasn't my problem. I think they didn't bother to switch me or anything like that because it was too far in the season. But he got some work after that. You know, he got some homework basically. Yeah. They let him know that he was the one causing the problem. And it just like was such a relief for me. And after that, I got my swagger back. You know what I mean? See, it was like all I needed.
That's good. It's good that it got you your swagger back. But I would argue, and that now this is not really applicable in the world of drumming because you really are only as good as the person next to you. You can't listen over them. It doesn't work like that. But if your swagger was well intact, you may have taken the initiative to be like, everybody stop for a second. Let's just the three of us drum. I got to figure this out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you were just like, I'll entertain that it might be me, but I'm not going to assume it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's
I just assumed it was.
Of course.
Because that's what I was told.
Yeah.
And I thought I just didn't know better.
Yeah.
You know?
It's hard, man. It's hard stuff. And that that's... Oh, boy, it takes me back. You know what I mean? And it's amazing. Now, let me tell you a terrible story about swagger having gone wrong.
Okay.
This is me and I'm going to, this is going to be bad.
Take yourself down a notch. I like this.
Well, no, I did. I mean, no, I'm going to take down my integrity a notch is what I'm going to do. Now, I was a young kid, but I still, so at NAU, I would go to the camps, the music camp there, right? And that's where it would just bring in musicians from all over. It wasn't just NAU bound. It was just bring musicians from all over to come do this. And I remember my first year, I was either a junior or senior in high school or whatever. And I knew that I was going to be the best drummer. I knew I was going to be the best field drummer there, best snare drummer. Not for a second did I think I'd be the best drum set drummer. Mm-hmm. Especially because NAU, and now I'm, forgive me, I'm not trying to say what you just talked about was not awesome because it is, right? NAU is marching band, not known for anything. Can we get some flams, please? You just said it, right?
No,
yeah,
it was weak.
They're bad. You're very, very good. They were very bad. So that kind of the persona there, but this was bringing in a bunch of different musicians, but I still was confident. We were all the same age group. And I knew I was going to be the best one. So I had that swagger. I did. And I was always working at it anyways. But I decided, I almost want to stop myself and not tell the story because I'm very embarrassed. But I decided I'm going to actually have some fun with this. This is bad. I'm going to have some fun with it. I'm going to hide how good I am. And so, and I'm going to, for some reason, I don't know why I want to do that. I'm going to hide it. And then I'm just going to display it in some sort of fun fashion. So I went to, there was like an actual drum line. You never went to that camp that it was great. You know, everybody's thinking of American Pie right now, but it's not band camp. Okay. It's actually like, it's band camp is when a band from a school goes and does a camp. This was a music camp that attracted musicians from all over. It was amazing. Okay.
So one time?
It's one time. Anyway, so I got there and there was this, you know, it was a drumline class type thing. So I went in there and I decided I'm going to show people that I'm above average, but I'm going to hide it. And I don't know why. I was like, I want to just put it on display in a very different fashion. I don't know why. And I was drumming with people and they realized I was pretty good because I was doing about 30% of what I could do. I took a peek at what they're capable of and it was like third grade stuff. And this is what it felt like to me. And I was on a very different level. And so I made sure that they knew I was pretty good. But then there was this guy coming in who was like, he hadn't gotten to the camp yet. And they're like, dude, you're going to like so-and-so. I forget. He had like this really cool, like either it was his last name or his nickname or whatever, but he was going to be late to the camp because he was apparently legitimately auditioning for Smashing Pumpkins. They had to get rid of their drummer and he was auditioning. Like, and I was like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. You know, I don't know how true it was. So what was his name? Oh, I wish I could remember. It doesn't matter. And they're like, you're going to like him. They're like, but dude, they're telling me like, this guy's amazing. Like he's amazing. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, that's when I'll do it. You know what I mean? So I'll let him come on in and make him feel like he's still the number one. And then I'm going to destroy him in front of everybody. This is hard for me to say. Now keep in mind, I was young. Okay. Mm-hmm. I really was like 17, 18, whatever it was. And he comes in. It would have been really great. Really great if he also wasn't one of the sweetest guys you've ever met. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, hey, come over, drum with this guy. You know what I mean? Because I made sure that they all knew I was a little bit better than them, but they had no idea where I was at. Come drum with this guy. So he comes over and he's like, hey, and he introduces himself, super nice guy. And we just start drumming a little bit and I just get a beat of where he's at. And he's good. He's very good. He's not going to hold a candle to me though. He's very good, but I'm about to do something bad. So I just emptied the bank. I just went nuts. And as I did it, the whole class, everybody around you, the faces smashed up against the glasses. Everybody's like, what is going on in there? And I just shredded. And I went on for about 5 minutes, dude. And when I was finished, he was super cool. And he just sat there in silence staring. when I was done, like I just finished with the lick and he's like, who are you? You know what I mean? He was like, it was pure curiosity. Who are you? And then I said who I was in my school. And then that's when he's like, I know who you are. Yeah. You know what I mean? Cause my name had traveled at that point. Right. Yeah. I'd already gotten like first in the state or whatever it was. Actually it couldn't have been because the first in the state was the year after. I don't know, but he had heard of me. You know what I mean? And when I told him my name and what school I was from, that's when he was like, I know who you are, you know? And he's like, you're here in front of me. Like it was this good moment. He's like, dude, you're awesome. And then next thing I know, I'm like, I really, really wish I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I feel like a complete asshole right now. Why did I do that? Because I was in that world. I was raised by that's what it was. And I fought that urge the whole time. I remember when I was a freshman, our instructor who taught me everything, he had a big beef with another instructor. And we went to a competition and he knew that I was better than their senior and I was a freshman and we were warm up in the lot and he just, you know, he was young too. In his defense, he was young too. Even as an instructor, he was like 21, 22. So there I am all of 15 or 16 or whatever. And I'm as a freshman. In 4 months, I became better than his rival's best player. And they were like a couple hundred feet away and he grabs my harness and he just starts dragging me over there. I'm like, what are we doing? He's like, come with me. And he comes over and he's like, you see this guy here? Get in there and shame him. And I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, go in there and destroy their section leader. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And he's like, dude, you're better than that. You're better than him. You're way better than him. And he's like, get in. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I remember I was like, I'm not doing that to somebody. And I said, I'll drum right here outside of their circle, but I'm not invading their space to go do that. So I did. I drummed really hard and I could see that like their section leader's shoulders kind of slump, you know? And I was just like, that did not feel good. And then you fast forward and it's like, I declined in my integrity and here I am in this crushing this sweet guy. And, and I remember every bit of that because it's like, it has stuck with me where I was like, I'm not going to be that guy ever again.
Sometimes those bad decisions are going to leave those marks on us that make us better people afterwards.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why you remember it.
Yes.
You'll never make that mistake.
No,
again.
I will not. I won't. That was, I don't know why. And I think that's what actually bothers me the most is I don't know why I did that. I don't know why nobody had wronged me. I had nothing to prove. I had nothing that would even lead you to be like, well, maybe this is why.
Yeah.
Nothing was going wrong in my life. It was nothing like that. I just gave into this primal instinct that was vicious. And I don't know, I don't know why I did it. And what's crazy is my roommate at the time was also another drummer. And when we got back to the room, he's like, well, what was that? What was that? Why did you hide that? What is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And cause I left this part out, but on day one, when we were both drummers, he's like, oh, we do kind of a drum thing for the talent show. He's like, maybe you can show us what you got and maybe be a part of it, you know? And I was like, yeah, maybe. I knew I would never do that. I knew I was going to do a solo, right? Mm-hmm. And after that moment, he was just like, what is that? Why did you not tell me? He's like, be in our show. I'm like, no, I actually have something I'm planning. And he's like, oh, come on, please. You know, I was like, no, I have something I'm planning. So I just kind of did my own thing or whatever. But that dude who I shamed, as we put it, I hate that word so much. He was the nicest guy in the world and did it. I don't think here's what made him better than me. I don't think it even touched his confidence on any level.
Yeah.
He was better than me. Not a better drummer at the time, probably a better drum set drummer. I'll be honest with you there. But, in our world, he wasn't better and he knew it and it didn't touch his confidence. That's also swagger.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a different level.
Yeah. Right, we've been talking about all the things that like have taken our confidence down and taken our swagger away.
Yeah.
But to be able to get hit with something like that and not let it bring you down.
Yeah. He's bulletproof. You know,
you know, you go up to the plate, you strike out and you say, I'm going to get the next one. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like you don't let that stuff affect you as much and bring you down. Like that's another level of confidence and swagger.
Yeah.
I think
you can go back to baseball and there's times where the batters are so confident and then the pitcher will strike them out looking because the pitch was just that good. And instead of getting upset, sometimes as they're walking away, they point to the pitcher and they go, ooh, I said, you know what? That was good. Yeah. You know what I mean? And cause it was, that pitch was good. Enjoy your moment. Not going to give you another one. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's great. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a perfect way to display it. Oh man. Well, that's That's fun.
It is. I just, you know what though, dude? And I know it's more than just physical stuff. I feel like when I make Minecraft videos or when I make any sort of YouTube videos where we do the live series, I feel like I got swagger there and the proof is there because you go back to the old videos or when I was younger, first starting, you can go back to your old ones. No swagger. The voice is like, I'm just very calm. Yeah. I don't want to mess up. It's the worst. But now I hit record and I'm just like, my voice is good.
10 years from now, you're going to look at stuff you made yesterday and cringe probably.
Yeah.
Because you're getting that much better, you know?
Yeah.
Today, I know you have that swagger because like you'll send screenshots of your editing timeline because you're super proud of your cuts. Super proud of how well you edited.
Yeah.
And so you're like, look at my timeline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You send us that stuff and you wouldn't do that if you didn't have swagger and your ability to edit videos or make, you know, all of your content, the way you make it and edit it and you know, the way you act in the life series and everything like that. Like you have every reason to have swagger. You're doing an amazing job, you know? So keep it up.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
You do you.
Yeah. Do your thing.
Do your thing. Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, let's keep up the swagger on this podcast. And let's
Man. Like, geez, what are we? 43?
This is 44. This
44?
Is 44.
We're like,
wait, hold on. 40. Hold on. I got to decide if I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I got to do a name it. I got to do it.
All right.
44. Who can name that movie? I have to do it. I didn't cuss. The movie did.
That's a quote. You're allowed to cuss if you
yeah,
quote.
Yeah, you're allowed to do that.
I remember as a kid, they're like, you know, third grade, people would be like, they would cuss. They'd be like, quote, that's a quote. And they
would like, yeah, I'm allowed to.
Because I heard that word in a movie, so it was obviously a quote. And
like, oh. Dude, there was this, I've got to end the podcast, but there was this clip I saw. I don't know who it was, but there's this rapper on stage and he's doing his thing and he's got a crowd and the whole time he's doing it, he starts to lock eyes with, I don't know how genuine this clip is, but it looks very genuine. He starts to lock eyes with somebody in the crowd. And as he's locking eyes and rapping and doing his thing, he goes, oh, hold up, stop the music. Get this kid up on stage. And he gets this kid up on stage. Who's gotta be, I don't know, 10 or whatever. He's like, you are singing along with me every single word. Do you know all my words? He's like, I do. He's like, get this kid a mic. So he gets him a mic. He's like, let's do this next piece together. And this little kid goes, wait, hold on. Mom, can I say the bad words?
Oh, so cute. That's awesome.
And then you see the artist. He's like, she said yes. So good.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, man, let's keep it rolling. I was going to say we're approaching like having a full year.
Yeah, it's nuts. How is that possible?
That's crazy. Because what was our initial goal? I know we brought this up before, but our initial goal was just to
do 20.
Do 20.
Yep.
And then boom, we're gonna have a year on our belt. And everything's going well for the podcast. It's been well received.
Yeah.
We're getting guests lined up. We're gonna have another one soon. And we got a few ideas for more guests in the future. I can't wait. I love the guest ones. I love these as well. I hope everybody enjoys them all. Of course, but I actually get a little even extra excited when we have a guest to come on just to shake things up a little bit.
Keep it fresh. And I want to say, and I talked, so there are our podcast, two podcasts ago, number 42, we were actually, I don't know how confident we are that center camera is still working, but
battery was dying when we started.
Yeah. We'll see. So I guess I'll go look back and forth. Two podcasts ago, I was talking about the fact that we're referencing what's stopping you and that the things that a lot of people did was coming full circle and like re-inspiring me to get off my butt. And since that podcast, I've signed up for Orange Theory. I just did my fifth session of it. Like I'm listening to their stories and it came all the way back around. And so I'm literally telling the ether out there, I appreciate you and thank you because like it's inspired me to make a shift. And hopefully I have the discipline to keep it up. But it has. I'm watching what they're doing because of our words. And I'm like, it was just words coming out of this hole in my face.
I know. It was easy for us to just say that. And then like everyone else went and acted on it. And
yeah.
It was like, oh, actually you're the courageous ones because you're actually doing something. We just said it.
You said it. All we just said, you went and did it. And you know what? You did it. And so I'm going to also. And like
that's cool.
Their story. I want them to know when they share their stories with us, it doesn't go into a black hole all the time. It resonates, man. It means something. It really does. And to the point where I was like, I don't want to be that guy that just is all talk.
Yeah. Lip service.
Yes. Yeah. And I heard a quote, a great quote the other day. Don't stop telling people what you're going to do. Just show them your results. And that's why I was just like, you know, at the time I remember thinking about joining, and I don't know, hopefully, I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but I think I went through my head, like, just keep quiet. Don't say anything unless you've done it. And I've done it. So, and I'm moving, you know what I mean? So hopefully I keep it up and keep that discipline up. So thank you.
Not hopefully.
Very much.
No doubt.
No doubt.
No doubts.
Swagger. You know,
keep that confidence that you're going to just gonna keep crushing it.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you, man.
Thanks, man.
I'm going to get on board too.
You're doing your own thing.
I do my thing. I just wish I was more consistent. That's all.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not enough to make a dent the way I want to make a dent. So it's time to just turn the dial. You know, I'm in motion, but I'm idling. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm with you. And free plug for Orange Theory, like, the commitment thing's big. You schedule, you can't cancel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It costs money to cancel. I dig that.
Yeah.
You know?
Orange Theory is like a gym.
It's a membership. Gym. Thank you very much. It's a gym. You wear a monitor and they have your stats up on the board. And for the record, my name on the board is Skiz, which is That's awesome. Crazy. Yeah. I actually made it Skiz on the board. And I could tell people, like, what does that mean? But another guy goes by the Incredible Hulk, so that's fine.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're allowed nicknames. Sweet. Awesome, man.
I'm going to keep it up. Next podcast, hopefully we'll have a guest on here soon.
Yeah, if all goes well, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Next one, next week, guys, we'll have a guest. Not going to say who it is. We'll keep it secret, but you'll see. You'll see. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I promise that.
Always is.
But okay. Well, I'll see you guys. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.